Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Hello, everybody. We are live, and we have just finished watching UFC Fight Night, Zombie versus Agui. Let's hit that intro. Hello, everybody. I am Mags, and with me, as always, my son, Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
I'm not too bad. How's yourself?
Yeah, tired, but ready to break down the action here for five rounds on UFC Fight Night, Young versus Agui. Quickly, let's run through these prelims. So we started with Casey O'Neill choking out Lara Procopio in the women's flyweight division. Then we got our first knockout of the night with Rick Glenn, the 37-second knockout of Joaquin Silva. Then we got a decision in heavyweights with Josh Parisian against Rocky Martinez, Josh picking up the victory. And then Kaelin Williams getting the decision in the welterweight division against Matthew Semelsberger. Werner Yandurova got the second round doctor stoppage on Kanako Murata after she broke Kanako's arm in an armbar. And then we finished the prelims with Nicolai Negremarenu, I'll struggle with that name, picking up a very dubious decision against Alexa Camo, and a lot of fence grabbing in that match. Referee Mark Beltran told both fighters at least four or five times about grabbing the fence. But let's get into this main card. And we started with Matt Brown taking on Diego Lima. And it started a good little run of people trying to one-up each other in knockout. So I thought that Lima started the brighter. Very evasive, very in and out, but was landing those calf kicks. And you could see as the round went on, Matt Brown's leg got redder and redder, and his calf got more and more swollen. He was landing a lot of his own kicks as well, though, to be fair. It's just that Lima did a lot better in kind of checking them and making sure that they didn't have that as much sting on them as the ones that Lima threw. But coming into that second round, and it was, I think Matt Brown had just had enough, and he thought, I'm not putting up with this leg kicking bullshit anymore. Texted for about a minute or so, and then lands a one punch, essentially walk away knockout. What a great comeback after being totally dominated in that first round. And then kind of like still taking a lot of the same grief in the beginning of the second, but landing that clean round down the middle, and Lima was good night. Carlos, what did you think of this fight?
Thought it was a really good fight. As soon as, weirdly enough, my wife was watching it with me this time, and she usually doesn't really watch it that much, but I was explaining to her, I was in Lima, he come from a fighting family, we know his brother is one of Bellator's champions.
His brother just lost last weekend, I think, Douglas Lima.
But he's just lost.
Yeah, I believe
right, so. Right, so I'll repeat that. He's not Bellator champion anymore.
No.
But yeah, they both fighting brothers, and Lima coming against Matt Brown. Matt Brown, for someone who's 40 years of age, a lot of common people or a lot of new fans might think, oh, look at him, grey hair, he's 40-year-old, he's done him, he's going to get walked through. But Matt Brown is one of them fighters who's just always scary. Not only is he a brilliant coach now, he's still a brilliant fighter at the age of, at the young age of 40, he's making it look. Obviously, the commentators stated out, and you have to be blind not to be able to notice Matt Brown's sort of style, with it being sort of a Muay Thai lead leg heavy style, and you'll always see a Muay Thai style being heavy on the leg, but they somewhat can bounce on it and bring it up and down. But in mixed martial arts, obviously, you can't just keep bouncing your front leg, and obviously you're going to get tucked down, and that's why sometimes different fighting styles don't mix into mixed martial arts fully. Like we can see in that one, Muay Thai, the front leg is there to get kicked all day, and it's what you're putting a lot of the pressure on it. So a lot of pressure on your leg equal a lot of impact. It's only going to go one way. And Matt Brown wasn't checking him a lot. Again, when you're a lot of a lead leg heavy way in Muay Thai, and you're bringing it up all the time, and then you're checking it, odds are they're going to start throwing a leg kick to open up the head as soon as they throw a leg kick, and you're going to be like, oh, check, one's coming over the top, and before you know it, again, you're fucked. So, yeah, Matt Brown did it perfectly, where we were able to check him when he needed to, turn it into a dogfight. Let's face it, that's what he needed to do. As Lima were a little bit too clean to not make it a dogfight. I seen straight away, obviously, when Lima was throwing the kicks, he was more throwing the kick from his foot rather than actually getting it with the actual shin of his leg. But obviously, the way he was kicking it, he was trying to get behind the knee. So that was, when you're getting, imagine this now being, obviously, your femur, your patella, he's trying to get around this part here to try and mess up the muscles, the ligaments and all that stuff around the knee, so it somewhat shuts the top part and the bottom part of the leg down. You have to do that with a foot. It's just the curvature on your foot. You can get all the way around on it and sometimes get that sciatic nerve what's going down the back of your, going back of your, down the back of the knee.
Yeah, like we saw recently with the drop foot.
Yeah. So yeah, he was doing that, but then obviously when it does come to checking that, a shin is a lot harder than your feet. So when Matt Brown checked the kick and Lima felt it, you could see him put his breath out. He's like, oh shit. I knew it. I could see it hurt him. I've done the exact same when I was in sparring. You can't, in sparring, you can show it a little bit more because obviously you're sparring, it's not a fight, but you're still like, shit, don't want to show that, because you're still going to get used to trying to block the pain out and try and put on that wall face of fucking hurt. But yeah, I've done it myself. But congratulations to Matt Brown, 40 years of age, and still being able to pull off a. Yeah. I'm not surprised that he pulled it off. Let's get it. I know it might sound like, oh, he's a dick. He's not surprised. It's Matt Brown. He can do stuff like that. But at the age of 40 years, he's more impressive than anything.
Absolutely. After that, we went into the welterweight division, or middleweight division, sorry. Bruno Silva making his UFC debut. The guy has been a journeyman in MMA. This was, I think, his 26th fight altogether, and he was taking on Wellington Turman. And to be fair to Wellington, I thought he started off really brightly. The commentary were really bigging up Bruno Silva. He was the favourite going into the fight. They had a submission bout a few years ago, which Bruno Silva handily won. And for somebody who suffered a submission loss to Bruno Silva, Wellington took it to Silva in terms of submitting. He had him up against the fence quite a lot. He was very aggressive with trying to get the back. A couple of times he backpacked And luckily for Bruno, somebody was able to shake Thurman off both times. But there was plenty of positive work coming from Wellington, and it looked like Wellington maybe had Silva's number. But the second time that Wellington went for the backpack and he was thrown to the floor, Silva was able to get a dominant position. Thurman tried for an armbar, which just wasn't there, and it left him wide open to take those ground and pound shots. And Thurman was basically punched clean out. Silva landed with the right, a couple of lefts, and we get our second knockout of the main card. And this one comes a lot quicker than the first one, with about 15 seconds of the first round to go. Bruno Silva gets a debut victory.
That's it. As you were speaking, then I'm looking at this fight and thinking to myself, what the fuck happened in this fight? It's one of the fights. We always say it, the numbered pay-per-views can somewhat be a bit boring, but these smaller ones can be excited, and that's tonight's card was a little bit excited for me. I really enjoyed watching it, mm-hmm. So I sort of forgot this, but yeah, Bruno Silva is the guy who was making his debut, weren't it?
Yeah.
And what a perfect way to make your debut. You've got a guy like Thurman who's an absolute animal, who comes looking for a fight and who will bring the fight to you. He was trying to do that as best as he could, especially like you were saying when he was backpacking, trying to get on the back and just stay there. And unfortunately, not everyone's Damien Maia, so they can't just sort of hang about like that. And yeah, Thurman, you've got to give it to him. He was trying his best, but we knew the better man were tonight, and it was Bruno Silva. Mm-hmm. He was able to come into the octagon, deal with the adversity, turn it around, and get a knockout victory. And like this being said, he's fresh blood. So if he carries on doing that in the middleweight division, he'll probably be on the road to a title shot quicker than normal. So let's put it this way. Israel Adesanya, he's only had 11 fights in the UFC. Six of them fights have only, I think, they've been non-title bouts or title bouts or something. Mm-hmm. So I think he made his debut 2 or 3 years prior to actually getting a shot at the belt. So anything's possible in the UFC, especially in that weight category. And Silva, he fought. But as soon as he got to the ground, he fought. And the one thing that Alan always told me is, when you're on the ground, you're either looking for the submission with a position, or you're looking for the finish with a grounding pound. You never get to the ground and just stay there or just lie there. The only times you lie there is when you're doing it for a quick 10, 15 seconds just to get your breath back before
exploding.
Yeah, before exploding and going to that next position or trying for that submission. You never... Yeah, everything has to be fast, everything has to be quick. As soon as you're slow on the ground, that's when your opponent's got time to think. Now, obviously, Thurman was going for an armbar. He left himself open, and Silva was able just to put himself a little bit to the right, just on the outside of Thurman's hips. That opened up the amethyst, that opened up the somewhat cross to the bottom. And yeah, perfect victory, and what a debut. Carry on doing what you're doing.
Absolutely. Going into the third fight of six on this main card, and we get our third knockout in a row. And this one top trumps the last two because it's the quickest knockout on the main card. Julian Erosa taking on Seong Woo Choi. Erosa started quite bright, landing kicks to the calf. Choi lands a couple of shots down the middle. Both fighters seem to be kind of like almost trying to test the ranges, but then Erosa throws a head kick, which gives Choi the opportunity to land a big left that drops Erosa. Choi lands on him, just parries him with punches, and Mark Smith comes in. After giving Erosa plenty of time, I thought maybe a bit too much time, but he jumps in and stops the fight, and Choi with a very quick 1.5 minute victory.
Yeah, very quick. Now, I'm going to sound like a dickhead, but some people might look at that fight and go, oh, well, that performance, it deserves a title shot. Not necessarily. It might have been a quick finish. It might have been a good performance. But if you look at Choi as a fighter in the UFC, he's been one of these fighters who you don't know whether to bet on him winning or losing. Because if you, when he came to the UFC, he was 2-0. He was... Yeah, 0-2, sorry, 0-2. Mm-hmm. He lost his first two fights, and then now, his last two fights, he won them. So he was 2-2. This fight was it sort of...
Makes him 3-2, yeah.
Yeah, was sort of making it even, was to where it is. So again, he's one of the fighters who you can never really count on whether he's going to show up to the office having a good day or having a bad day. Today, he had a very good day. He was able to... He looked quicker... He looked sharper. He looked cleaner. He just looked better all round. Now, obviously, we didn't get to see a lot of grappling or clinch work or anything, but with the way it looked, he was a more confident fighter, and he just looked like he got into any of their positions. He would probably be he probably could handle them. So yeah, there's not really a lot to say on this fight because it ended so quick, and you can't really give his opposition a lot to do because. He got his ass whooped. He got his ass handed to him. It's not like we can say like one of the last fights where he got the fight brung to him, and he didn't really bring the fight to him. He couldn't really hit Sung Choi. He were able to do whatever he wanted in that fight. Mm-hmm. A good win for him, and I'd like to see him move on to just a little bit more of. He made that fight look easier. I want to see him fight someone who's just a little bit better.
Yeah.
Not to jump up the ladder, but climb up there.
Yeah, both these guys are nowhere near the top 15 at all. I do get your point. Whilst probably Erosa is a better fight for Choi than he's had. I mean, this is a guy who got decisions against Yusuf Zalal and Mkhitaryan. Maybe someone closer to the top 15, if not the top 20. But still, a quick 9-second victory is still very impressive. Although I think the talk of him being given a title shot is very, very early, considering what we got in the main event. But we'll get to that. So next we went down to the bantamweight division. Davy Grant taking on Marlon Vera. This is a rematch from one of Marlon Vera's very early fights in the UFC. One where he just wasn't able to get the victory. 16. Yeah, he wasn't able to get the victory over Davy Grant, but he was able to get that win back. And he did it in style. I think he started the first round. I thought Grant started the better. He looked the more confident. Was landing quick kicks. Was throwing a spinning kick at one time. Vera was he looked fairly comfortable in the pocket doing that dirty boxing. But I think that Grant was quickly setting the pace. But he did take a bit of damage to the eye. I think you could see that some of that scar tissue opened up fairly early for Grant. Into the second round, we started again with more calf kicks. And this time it was Vera who was really lighting Davy Grant up, landing shots in the clinch, landing those kicks. I think he kind of turned the pace up a little bit more. And then when he started throwing those elbows, and then we see another cut open up on Davy Grant just underneath the airline. It looked like he'd been murdered, the amount of blood that was coming out of him. We end up going to the ground. We see an attempt at an omoplata. Grant was able to keep top control. And then going into the third, it was Marlon Vera who wanted to really kind of take this fight to Grant, landing bigger shots. Went for the arm triangle pretty early on, and essentially it was Vera kind of like suffocating and posturing up on Grant and just dominated him in this third round to really kind of put it out of the judges' mind. I think, in fact, in this third round, you could probably say it was a 10-8 round. Vera was that dominant on the ground, being able to kind of have his way with David Grant. Marl Vera gets that victory back, and it's a really kind of like dominant, decisive victory for him.
It definitely is. Now, obviously, David Grant, England born and proud, he brung the fight. He were a dog in that fight. Mm-hmm. He, don't matter how much punishment you give him, he walking forward. He's one of them guys you have to take the oxygen away from him for him to go out. You have to physically throw his brain from out of his skull for him to stop walking you down. But he didn't do enough to win tonight, and Vera was able to pick up the decision victory, which is, to me, I'm happy for him. Obviously, when they first fought, he was young, it went to decision, he lost the decision. They've both matured, they've both got better. Marvin Vera, was just a little bit better on the ground. That's why he was able to sort of control the position. Now, obviously, breaking it down from round to round like that, you've already done, you can see where Grant was taking the first, and then it was slowly, as the fight was going, you can see where Vera was somewhat coming to take over the pace of it. Now, Vera, again, he's one of these fighters that have traded wins and losses in the UFC. I think in the last 4 or 5 years, 2019, it was probably his best year where he didn't lose a fight. I think he had about 4 fights that year and he won all of them.
Yeah.
Whereas other than that, it's either been like 2 wins, 1 loss, or 2 losses, 1 wins, or win-loss.
Yeah.
It's never been really like consistent.
Well, in 2017, he had a fairly decent run, but over this last 18 months or so, he's lost to Song Yadong, then he beat O'Malley, then he lost to Aldo, and now he's beat David Grant. So he is very much trading those wins and losses.
Yeah, and even though, as much as I love Vera, and he does a perfect job for the UFC. He's a perfect fighter. He loves to fight. He also works his commentary for them, for the Espanol.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, he's going to be one of them fighters that the UFC are going to look at and have a little bit of room for him in that sort of like sweetheart bit of the UFC.
Well, he called out Dominic Cruz, so I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't get that fight.
I don't know. That's a fight. Going on to that in a second. But obviously, with him being working for the UFC, it's going to obviously give him a little bit more leeway with the UFC. But he needs to, for him to move forward, for my personal opinion, for him to move forward and actually get took seriously by his competitors, by the champion, not just by the UFC and the fans, because it's easy to get them to sort of back you. You can speak a lot of shit and Dana White's got an hard on for you. You can call someone a dickhead and make someone laugh, and you've got 200 fans shouting your name. It's the champions, it's the other fighters who put an actual name on your name, and actually, I might be a competitor, but fuck me, I respect it because it's a good fighter. And Marvin's got that, but he just hasn't got that consistency to have that champion's mindset of trying to keep it winning and moving on up in the ladder. It's always win-loss, and then sort of his mind slips away from getting that goal. And I think that a lot of the fighters sort of get into that habit of win-loss. Well, I'll forget why I got into the fight game. And the next thing before you know it, you took a lot of punishment and it's like, hang on a minute, I'm nowhere near close to that title. But yeah, a perfect win for him. He was able to overcome adversity, which is not surprising for someone like a veteran for how many fights he's had in the UFC. But I'd like to see him move forward. And for him calling out Dominic Cruz, like Dominic Cruz put it into play, everyone wants to move up a ladder. Dominic Cruz is an ex-champion, ex-double champion. It's obviously the same weight class, but he's looking at getting back to that spot. So he's not going to want to fight someone who's ranked 12 or whatever he's going to want to fight someone who's ranked four or ranked three. Because again,
yeah, I mean, I understand that, but you look at the top of the ranking. You've got that the likes of Edgar, Rob Font, Corey Sandhagen. Obviously, you've got Jan and Sterling rounding it out. But would you say Marlon Vera's ready for those kind of guys?
No, but then I also don't say that he's somewhat ready for a guy like... Because a lot of people might look at Dominic Cruz and think he's washed up and he's done that, but he's far from done. He's still definitely a world-class fighter in that octagon. And the way, obviously, Marvin fought in that... Yeah, he can hit hard and he can swing, but Dominic Cruz has got a weird sort of movement and his head movement is just there. I don't think Marvin, the way he is now, I don't think he can sort of keep up with Cruz's pace. I could be wrong, I could eat my words, but again, I just don't think Dominic, his team, would accept that fight when they want to move forward as well as him. Obviously, it's a shit thing that happens, but it happens all the time in the UFC with every single weight class. You always get the top fives who don't want to fight people behind them. They always want to fight forward, and you can't blame them. Obviously, I give other fighters shit for doing it, but then you've also got to think of their sense of, if I lose to rank 9 and I'm rank 4, I'm going to lose my fucking spot. Mm-hmm. And then again, I'm not close to having that title, so... You've got to also think that way. If you're serious about having going on that title run, you do what the main event just did. You fight smart. Just because your name's the Korean Zombie doesn't mean you're going to live up to that art every single time. You've got to think about your career.
Mm-hmm. Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey folks, PC Tony here. Thanks to our new partnership with Angry Lemonade, you can save 10% on physical products and digital commissions using the promo code CHAIRSHOT. Head to angrylemonade.net to check out their amazing catalog of products and services. Use the promo code CHAIRSHOT to save 10%. That's angrylemonade.net.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
Go to powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT. Get your free month. Again, that's powerslam.tv, promo code CHAIRSHOT.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
We'll get to the Korean Zombie in a minute, but we'll get let's get into this core main event in the heavyweight division: Alexei Oleinik and Sergey Spivak. And for me, this is frustrating because Alexei Oleinik is the kind of fighter who I should love because he never gives up. He's got a massive heart. He's almost like a zombie in the fact that he always goes forward and he's always looking to hurt his opponent. But I just don't enjoy watching him because I think he's took so much punishment over his career that he gets punch drunk really, really quickly. And we saw that in this fight. Well within the first round, we saw that he almost gets like he's dazed for the rest of the fight, and he's just fighting off instinct rather than being a clever, smart fighter. Both guys were looking to finish this fight. Both guys were throwing big ass punches. But for me, I thought that Spivak fought the more sensible. He tried to stay out of danger when he could, whereas Oleinik was just he just reminds me of a zombie, basically just going forward and you just can't stop him. And his shots were very, very wild and pretty easy for Spivak to kind of like avoid. And then Spivak was able to land his shots with ease. We do see a point in the first round where Olenek gets it to the ground, and we see that he essentially just drags Spivak on top of him into mount. Going into the second, a lot of the same thing, except this was more Olenek trying to kick the legs and Spivak just peppering him away with the straights. Again, we get a little bit of clinching, and we get Olenek, who was able to keep hold of him and drag his opponent to the ground. I feel for Olenek, because there was a point where he was so close to getting a title shot in the light heavyweight division before he did his move up. And I think it's just a ridiculous. I just don't like the way he fights at all. Spivak in the third was able to just keep the pace that he kept in the first two. Was landing good shots, and then he gets the cut on Olenek, who starts bleeding again, just doesn't stop going forward. But for me, Spivak well deserved the victory. I think a couple of all three judges, sorry, gave it 29-28, which is fair, I suppose. You could say that Olenek maybe won that second round because of the control that he had on the ground. But for me, Spivak deserved the victory.
Yeah, definitely. Olenek, I respect him. He's one of them old school ones. You just have to look at his record. The guy's nearly had 80 professional mixed martial arts fights. That's like a boxing record or a kickboxing record. And for mixed martial arts, you're going up, what, in modern day, 20, 30 fights and push before they call it.
He's had 75 MMA fights.
And there's professional, so that's not counting in. That won't be, definitely won't be counting in his amateur or past experience before amateur. So, again, obviously, he's got his own little quirks, like that you already said about. Like, he's punch drunk sometimes. His striking's a bit out. But then we're somewhat also a grappler. His game plan is exactly like Khabib, exactly like DC. They want to take you down, they want to maul you, and they want to finish you. And that's been his game plan from his very first fight to coming into this fight. It's not been any secret. If you're a fan of his, or even if you're an opponent of his, you know what his game plan is. It's not like he has to hide it and be like, oh, watch what I'm going to do. You know exactly what he's going to do. He's going to try and punch his way in until he can close the clinch down. As soon as he closes the clinch down and grabs you, he's going to try and get that anabasic-like grip that he's got, and he's going to try and drag you down to the mat. And as soon as he drags you down to the mat, he's constantly going to work for that arm triangle. And he knows exactly what he's doing. Like, you see it in the first round and the second round, when he was able to somewhat get from the back control to full mount to arm triangle. And it's like, you knew what you were going to do, but you can't stop it. And for someone who's such a big guy, going from light heavyweight up to heavyweight, he's going to be walking around at a heavyweight. Now, obviously, grappling is going to be a lot strenuous on the cardiovascular system than striking is going to be. So that's why we can see Olenek in the later rounds getting sort of gassed out, because he's, in a way, he's doing it to himself, because, again, wrestling and sambo and all your grappling, you're controlling that person constantly. At least when you're on your feet and you can throw a quick jab, just fit, at least you can take a step back and breathe, and then before you re-emerge to sort of counter back or attack back. And yeah, Olenek's style is always a very high output of cardiovascular system, but then he also needs to do that in the very first at the very start of the round. You need to do that in round one, because if you get him past round one, you generally got a good chance at beating him. Because again, his striking's not up there. It's his grappling that is phenomenal. But then obviously his opponent, who I forgot his name because it's fucking...
Spivak.
Spivak. When you're looking at Spivak, he's... had six finishes, knockouts, six finishes, submissions. Mm-hmm. So he's well-rounded. He's a well-rounded fighter. But then you've got to look at him and go, oh, well, he's fighting Olenek. Is he going to go down to the ground? And he wasn't. He was all right on the ground. He was comfortable. Yeah, fair enough. You could tell that he didn't want to be there permanently. And when he wanted, when he could try to, he was getting back up to his feet, and he was trying his best. And he even had his own submission attempt with a little guillotine and stuff like that. But he was never gonna. You're never gonna choke Olenek out. And that was the perfect way of somewhat beating him by decision. Because again, there's numerous times where I've seen him take shot after shot just to close that clinch down. And like you said, he's cracking on a bit. He's had a lot of farts. And he does take a lot of punishment just to try and close the clinch work down. At least DC, when he had it, he's grabbing your hands in that lot to try and get in with being the smaller person. And you think Olenek, with having somewhat of a good reach, being 6'1" or 6'2", whatever he is, you think he's sort of boxing and level changing and somewhat going into the clinch, it'd be a little bit different. But he doesn't seem to mind taking a smack out mouth to sort of get in. And yeah, when you're at his age and when you've had that many farts, I don't think it's good for you. But then again, I don't think he's bothered.
Probably not. Then we got our main event, Dan Agha, on his last win, called out Korean Zombie, and the Zombie answered the call. Zombie making a what you could probably say is a last run at a title in this division. Being 35 is a hard division to be active in. It's full of young, hungry fighters. And Korean Zombie, wow, he took Dan Agha to school in this fight. And I've been really, really impressed with Dan Agha in the last 2 years or so. He's took on all comers, just been absolutely dominant, really kind of just able to demolish bigger fighters, because he's not the biggest he's not the biggest featherweight in the books by a long stretch of the imagination, but he's been able to beat really bigger guys like Barbosa and Gavin Tucker, and he was more than up for the challenge of Zombie, but unfortunately the class of Zombie in pretty much every aspect of MMA really shone through today. It's hard to really break down all five rounds, because this was probably as dominant a fight as you're going to see that isn't a finish. Zombie was better on the feet, quicker with the shots. His jab was absolutely on point. And this is against a fighter who is renowned for those quick kind of almost Diego Sanchez-like burst of 3, 4, 5 punches at a time. And Zombie was able to kind of nullify that and make sure that Ige was not able to land too many big shots. And then when Zombie wanted to go to the ground, 9 times out of 10, he got that takedown that he wanted, and he was able to really control Ige on the ground. In fact, in the third round, I think it was, he pretty much took him down at the start of the round and kept him there for the full round, attacking the neck, attacking the back, keeping the body triangle on. I've got to give props to Ige. He never let his head go down, especially when he's going into the fourth and his coaches were saying, you've got 10 minutes to do this. I believe in you. And he still kept going, and I've got to give him those props. He didn't give up, but unfortunately he had no answer to the dynamic striking of Korean Zombie. He wasn't able to stuff the takedown enough for me. He started doing well at sprawling in the later rounds, but I think it was just a little bit too little too late, I suppose. And going into the fifth, yet again, Ige tried to take the fight to Zomba, land some shots, tried to go for his own takedowns, but the takedown defense of Zomba is up there with the very best of them in this featherweight division. So we ended up essentially finishing the fight with Kareem Zomba with a body lock, happy enough to sit there and kind of just trade punches with Dan Ige, knowing that he's clearly won the fight, a good victory for Zomba, and that's got to put him next in line for the featherweight title.
You know what? That's you make a very good point with the way you just chuck that all into words. Zomba made Ige look like they were in a different class on the feet, boxing wise, and then also on the ground. Ige's supposed to be a black belt. Zomba looked like he was putting Ige through the paces to why he's not ready to be a black belt. Just by the way we were able to just control on the feet, on the ground, wherever he really. I say in a few fights, but he could have done whatever he wanted in that fight. And now again, going on to the topic of, like we said previously, about Zomba not living up to the name, the Korean Zomba, this fight just goes to show why it's good to think with your head and think about your career sometimes, and it is just going, putting on a slugfest, because he could have put a slugfest all day with Dan Ige. Dan Ige's good at that. That's his game. Dan Ige wants you to get into a brawl with him. He wants you to get in a dogfight because he's not the most technically sound. He's not the most technically gifted. He's not the best boxer in the world. And he's surely to go in that fight, not the best grappler. But he's got a fucking massive heart and his chin's rock solid.
Yeah. And so, he proved that in this fight because he took some big shots.
Yeah. And he will let you text. He will let you try and hit him all day if that means that you can be in the pocket and he can hit you back. Because he loves that fight where it's like, I'll see if I can give you more and you see if you can give me more. Whoever takes the first knee loses, basically. That's Dan Ige's mentality. That's Dan Ige's key of war. And the Korean Zomba used it perfectly against him in the first round. And weirdly, when I was watching him, obviously he's moving slow. His head movement slow. Dan Ige threw that jab, fast jab. And he were hitting him, but so I'm like, Korean's obviously a bit slow here. What's he doing? But he's not. He's feeling him out. He's making Dan Ige think, yeah, hit me. You can be in this. But he loves closing that distance down. He loves setting that trap up. But again, with the commentator said, he loves keeping that lead leg out there. He also loves keeping his hands down. He also loves getting into the range when he knows that you could at any point hit him. But then he's also whipped on enough to, hey, dickhead, bang. you know what I mean? But he's, Korean Zombie were able to just outclass Dan Ige tonight on the feet, on the ground, wherever he wanted to. And obviously with him having this win and with the way the featherweight division's looking, obviously Alec Volkanovski and Brian Ortega's going to be fighting for the belt.
And they're doing Ultimate Fighter.
Well, obviously, I think they've about to film that already. That's already filmed. Yeah,
The episodes haven't been released.
Yeah.
But then also bear in mind, we had Max Holloway pull out of the fight with Yair Rodriguez.
That'd be a good fight because if we can remember Yair Rodriguez with that beautiful backwards elbow to the Korean Zombie at the last second of a five-round fight, that could be a massive possibility for him. Would he take that? Again, because he already spoke about not fighting the zombie way, fighting smart, like you said. You think it might be his last run at the age of 35. It could possibly well be his last run at the title. If you want to, in the UFC, once you get the title, that's just the start of your beginning. When you want to get the respect and get the money and stuff like that, you've got to defend that belt at least once, or even get in a fight to defend that belt. Other than that, you're not just going to win the belt and then that's it. You're a millionaire. Not everyone's Conor McGregor, unfortunately. You need to pick that belt up and then carry on proving why you're the best. And yeah, unfortunately, the Korean Zombie definitely hasn't got that long. With the way he was fighting, his name's Korean Zombie. Yeah, everyone knows him. It's not like I have to tell you about his farts. He farts like a fucking animal. So that's going to take years off your life. It's definitely going to take its toll when you're in training. When you after a training camp, a grueling training camp, when you know that you're going into a fight like that, your training camps aren't the same. You're pushing yourself to the max. You've got sparring partners who, after one round of 5 minutes, it's not like you're going to be sparring him again after 30 seconds. No, you're going to be sparring another guy who's fresh as fuck, who's coming in, who's ready to take, who's trying to take your chin off, who's ready to smash your ribs in, who's ready to kick you to kingdom come, just to get you prepared for the fact that you're going to do it the exact same, but again, harder. So, yeah, it's not always good to fight. It's exciting. Everyone loves it. No one could lie and say that's not exciting, because who love two guys going in there and trying to take each other's fucking chin off?
It does take years off your life.
Yeah, it takes a massive toll on you. So, yeah, he's going to ask himself, does he fight these next people in line? Does he anticipate what the fight's going to be like? Or does he sort of do the Leon Edwards? Does he, after that performance, sit back and go, no, I'll tell you what, I'll wait. Whoever wins between the fight, between obviously Volkanovski and Ortega, I'll get it. But then that's where the ball's in his court, but then somewhat in the UFC's court, because then he's got to think of, well, what if Brian wins that in a spectacular fashion, or something else happens to them to have to rematch? Then he sat out waiting for it. Then what happens? But then that's where it all comes up, and we get to do more content for you guys.
And saying that, we'll be back next week. UFC back at the Apex, and an early one for us. The main card starts at 9 p.m. UK time, so that's good for us. We would prefer those.
I love the early ones, yeah. Especially me, because I can talk.
But
I'm not here, lad.
But that is actually headlined by two heavyweight fights, not title fights. Tanner Bowser taking on someone who I don't understand why he keeps revisiting the heavyweight division, but he's taking on Orvin St. Pierre. And then the main event, Alexander Volkov taking on Cyril Gagne, who's still unbeaten in the UFC, still unbeaten in his career, and just coming off that victory against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. So Cyril will be certainly looking to position himself as a future title contender. But definitely tune in for that next week. Thank you for listening. We always appreciate the listeners, the feedback and the comments. Follow me on Twitter at PodfatherMags. Follow Carlos here at Kirby_Carlos. And definitely go and check out the rest of the content on our networks at Visionaries Global Media, at Shooting the Sportsish, and at The Chair Shot. Thank you all for listening. And that is the end.
Adios, amigos.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.